Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Podcast on the Brink, recording this Thursday afternoon, February 3rd, ahead of Indiana's matchup this weekend against Illinois at Assembly Hall. And joining me today on Podcast on the Brink, Kai McCune of Three Man Weave. We had Matt from Three Man Weave back on in the fall and really enjoyed that conversation. And Kai's here to help us preview this weekend's game in Bloomington. Welcome to the show, Kai.
Alex, thanks for having me.
So, you know, I've already written my preview for this game, and, you know, I went into the Purdue game, the Indiana-Purdue game, thinking that wasn't a particularly favorable matchup for Indiana, but Rob Phinisee went nuts. Travion Williams scored 2 points and really didn't do anything, and Indiana won that game. Kind of going into this one with a similar feeling, just because of how well Kofi Coburn's played in the past against Indiana. He's 3-0 in his career at Illinois against Indiana. The other thing, you know, Trace Jackson Davis, he's put up some decent numbers against Illinois in the past, but I looked at his shooting over his three games in his career against Illinois, 14 of 40 from the field, which for a guy who's normally finishing in the, you know, the high 50%, 60% range of his twos to shoot 14 of 40, that tells me that he doesn't necessarily love playing against Kofi's size and, you know, presence at the rim. So just kind of open it up here. Your initial thoughts on this matchup for Indiana, what it looks like for them. Obviously, playing at home at Assembly Hall is a huge advantage, but on paper, doesn't necessarily seem like a great matchup when you look at the how Illinois has been playing and just their style of play for Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Assembly Hall has been incredible this year. I think you guys are 11-3 against the spread at home, which is nuts. And I've been to Assembly Hall. It's awesome. I totally buy the environment. It seems like Woodson has really gotten the crowd going too, which is nice after a couple of years of Archie Miller, which probably wasn't super popular there after a while. But as far as this game goes, yeah, who do you put on Kofi? I mean, you have 5 fouls with Michael Durr. Do you put Race Thompson on him? I know he's pretty strong, but Kofi Coburn is killing everyone this season. So it's probably a thing where he gets his. Now can TJD go on the other end and get his as well? I was hoping he could be a little bit too mobile for Kofi, maybe pull him out to the perimeter and beat him off the bounce. But as you said, he hasn't played very well against Illinois. So maybe there's something about him that throws his game off a little bit when he faces the Illini. I don't know who else Illinois would throw on, and maybe Coleman Hawkins can chase him around a little bit, but yeah, that's obviously the marquee matchup there. Indiana's defense has been really good though. Best in Big Ten play per KenPom. You got to watch out for Illinois shooters though. Some of the best in the country. And you know, that's always the game breaker, right? Who hits the most threes. I do think Indiana wins, but the matchup problems are a concern.
Yeah. Illinois is an interesting kind of departure from what we saw against Purdue, because Purdue came in with, you know, that really high powered offense, but defensively there was a lot of question marks. Illinois, not only are they good offensively, defensively, they're right there behind Indiana in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just very, very small difference. What's impressed you the most about Illinois defensively? Because I can remember those first couple of Brad Underwood years where it was basically like they were going for a steal every possession. It was really hard to watch at times. And it seems like he's really reinvented his scheme and what they do defensively. What stands out to you that's making them so effective on that end of the floor?
Yeah, he totally changed his style, right? He had that super pressure defense at SFA and even at Oklahoma State in first couple of years at Illinois, and it didn't work. They're getting killed. I think it's probably just doesn't work as well at the power level. Guys are too good handling the ball. The pressure doesn't bother them as much. Now they stay home and they're more disciplined in passing lanes. Underwood thinks Frazier is the best defensive guard, I think, in the country. He was pretty confident that he could handle Johnny Davis the other night. And lo and behold, I mean, Davis scored 22, but still it's Johnny Davis. I just think they have such a good combination of the guards are really good in the perimeter. And then you have Coburn, who's an anchor in the paint, who, you know, it's a luxury having a 7-foot, 300-pound guy in the middle. Discipline, I would say, to summarize that, is what I've been most impressed with in Illinois' defense.
you mentioned Trent Frazier, and I wrote today in the preview of the game that, you know, I think he's the best defensive guard in the Big Ten. I wasn't willing to go nationally because I follow the Big Ten, and I, you know, I've seen a lot of Big Ten games. I don't really watch other conferences as obviously as closely as you do, or as much as anybody that covers those leagues. But, you know, that brought up a question in my mind. You know, he's probably going to be on Xavier Johnson, I would think. Does Indiana have enough playmakers beyond that to score? Because you look at that game against Purdue, and obviously Fennessy played really well. Seems like he's out at this point. I don't know how long of an injury, long term, he's going to be out. But, you know, Illinois really forces you to make plays kind of one-on-one from the wings, and they like to force a lot of mid-range shots. And you look at what Indiana has around Xavier Johnson. I mean, they're starting Parker Stewart and Miller Kopp, and those guys aren't really necessarily creating much offense on their own. So is this just basically going to be about Indiana getting enough from TJD, Race, and Xavier Johnson, or do you see anything else, any other weaknesses, I guess, that Indiana could potentially exploit and get some offense? Because it seems to me like it could be a really tough game for Indiana to score enough to win.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of ISO, and I think that's been a little bit of the issue for Indiana this year. And with Xavier Johnson, he's such, and I haven't watched a whole lot of, I've watched a few games of Indiana, but to me, he makes me kind of nervous when he's handling the ball. He's so feast or famine, erratic, awesome at times, not great at other times. His shot is the most confusing thing in the world for a D1 guard to have that form, but he can be really good. He can be a playmaker. You're right. If they lock in on him with Frazier, who creates for the Hoosiers, Parker Stewart used to be a point guard. I mean, he played point at Tennessee Martin, at Pitt, but he's kind of a spot-up shooter now with Indiana. Great piece to have on the wing with him and Kopp. They're excellent from out there, but I do think creation off the dribble is going to be a problem, especially if TJD can't get it going again.
Our friends at Homefield produce the world's most comfortable premium licensed collegiate apparel out of their headquarters in Indianapolis. Run by IU grads, Homefield studies Indiana's history to come up with the most unique apparel designs available for Hoosier fans anywhere. Our current favorites at Podcast on the Brink are the 1987 National Champs t-shirt commemorating IU's last national championship and the vintage 1965 Indiana University Bison t-shirt. And it's not just Indiana apparel available at Homefield. They're constantly adding new schools to the over 120 currently available at homefieldapparel.com. Podcast on the Brink listeners can save 15% off of your first purchase by using code BRINK15 during checkout at homefieldapparel.com. You mentioned Stewart. Did it surprise you that, you know, I looked at some of his stats from when he was at UT Martin. He was obviously, he had free reign there. It was a lower level playing for his late father. But you know, watching film on him, I remember seeing a lot of possessions where he was going off the dribble and creating things for himself and a really quick release. And now it basically just seems like he stands on the perimeter and waits for somebody to create a shot for him. Has it surprised you at all that Indiana hasn't figured out a different way to utilize him? Or do you think that's just kind of a function of the players who are around him?
Yeah, it must be, because I agree. I was surprised. I thought he would be a playmaker for them, a guy that could handle the ball in Johnson or Finney's stead. And maybe it's just what Woodson wants. He just wants that type of role. And to credit Stewart, he's doing very well in that type of role off the ball. He's proven he can play as a system guy instead of a do-everything type of guy like he did with the Skyhawks. But yeah, I am sort of surprised. And can he flip the switch and do that all of a sudden in a big game against Illinois if he's called upon? I'm not sure. He hasn't done it all year. So, I'm surprised. He's top 100 recruit, right? He has the talent to do some of that stuff, but so far it's been kind of spot up shooting.
One guy I wanted to ask you about with Illinois, Alfonso Plummer, came over from Utah. Is like not somebody that, you know, in the off season, one thing I do is try to keep track of the Big Ten rosters, because with all of the player movement and the portal, it's just easier for me to keep a spreadsheet and kind of, every time a transfer is announced, you know, I add somebody in. Every time somebody leaves, I take them out and just kind of keep track of it through the off season. It's kind of helped me stay familiar with the league when I'm not following it as closely in the off season. But he wasn't a guy that I had like an asterisk by or anything. I mean, he was, you looked at his stats at Utah and they were good, but it wasn't like they were a great team. And he's come in now for Illinois, I think, is their second leading scorer. Some of that has to do with Curbelo not playing, I guess, as much this season as everybody thought. But for him to be getting 15 a game, shooting such a high percentage, was he, you know, with the work that you guys do at Three Man Weave, was he somebody you identified coming into the season as being this important to Illinois, or has he kind of outperformed expectations for what you had?
You know, we knew he was a good shooter, but I would say he still outperformed expectations. Coming from Utah, you assume Illinois is a bit of a step up. You know, Pac-12, Big Ten, still fairly good leagues in their own right. But I mean, he's not missing, and for my money, he might be the best shooter in the entire country. And some of the shots he hits, they're not just catch and shoot. It's like off the bounce, like very little room, and it goes in almost every time I watch him. It's incredible. And he's like 94% free throw shooter too. He just does not miss. Really beautiful stroke too. Lefty stroke. Yeah, super impressed by him. Obviously you have to guard him on the perimeter, or else it's going to be a long night.
With Kofi, you know, you talked about him a little bit earlier, but I had him as Big Ten player of the year in the preseason, and kind of going back and forth between him and Johnny Davis at this point of the season, just based on the fact that Davis has come out of nowhere in Illinois, or Wisconsin, excuse me, has really, you know, I had him eighth or ninth in the Big Ten going into the season, I think ninth, and they've been obviously a lot better than that. But I mean, where is he in your mind in terms of the National Player of the Year race and the Big Ten Player of the Year race? I want to get into kind of the Big Ten Player of the Year race and get your thoughts on a couple guys, but where is Kofi right now just in your mind in both of those races?
I think he's right up there, but it's strange. You don't hear his name come up a lot in conversations about it, at least what I'm hearing. You know, you hear Johnny Davis all the time, even hear like Jaden Ivey or Sheboy for Kentucky, but people haven't brought up Coburn a whole lot. And maybe it's because he missed those three games start the year. He's missed a couple recently for concussion protocol, but is there a more dominant player in the entire country than Kofi Coburn? Probably not. He can get 30 and 10 every single time he walks on the floor. The thing about the Big Ten is I would say probably the five of the top six or seven candidates for player of the year are in the Big Ten. So whoever wins the Big Ten player of the year, very likely could win National Player of the Year.
Yeah. Big Ten player of the year race, I would say, is probably Davis, Kofi, maybe EJ Liddell in the mix.
I think so.
Any of the Purdue guys?
Yeah, definitely Liddell. I think if you took Liddell off Ohio State, you're looking at a much different team. He just does so much on both ends for them. Probably the case of Johnny Davis too, but I really like that team. That core of Wisconsin has been super impressive. I agree with you. Preseason, did not think they had a chance to be this high in the Big Ten, but they proved me wrong. So yeah, maybe it comes down to who wins the league. You know, if Illinois wins the league, probably Coburn. If it's Wisconsin, Davis, you know, down the line.
You were at Wisconsin recently, I think. I mean, Indiana was up there earlier this season, had a 22-point lead and left with a loss, which is hard to do. Looking back on that game, you know, that they're probably going to want that one back depending on how the stretch run of the season turns out. You know, with Wisconsin, you know, Indiana's got them coming up at home in a couple of weeks. Have you, you look at their metrics, and Andy Bottoms, who does our bracketology at Inside the Hall, led this week's bracketology talking about Wisconsin as a team that, when you look at their metrics and where they're ranked, and KenPom specifically, they don't look like a two seed, but their performance to date justifies them being there. Is this just a team that has been able to figure out how to win close games? Is it a team that is just their luck's going to run out at some point? How do you kind of reconcile all that? Because I know once we get close to the tournament, people are going to be talking about teams who are good candidates for an early upset. And I think Wisconsin and Providence kind of look like two in my mind that maybe don't, you know, jump off the page at you where they're ranked in the rankings, but the record suggests that they're top 10 teams.
Yeah. And I'd probably definitely agree. Providence is probably a key candidate to getting upset. Their luck is kind of documented. I think even in KenPom, it's the highest in history right now, their luck factor. Wisconsin, I truly believe they have the whatever intangible you want to call it at it, late in games. They're so mature. Like, helps that Brad Davison's like 30 and it's been there for years and years. But they really are a mature team. They have great chemistry. And Guard was harping in the press conference how much they value every possession, how much they get along with each other, how much they don't panic, and they really buy into everything on both ends of the floor. So I left the Kohl Center just impressed by them completely, and I totally buy that they're a strong second half, late second half team because of that.
Kind of come out of nowhere, though, when you look at what happened in the offseason and the talent that they lost.
Yeah.
They had some really good players, you know, from last year who moved on. And you looked at kind of the optics of it this summer, it almost looked like this was a program that was going to go in the tank. And like I said, picked to finish, I think, 9th or 10th in the Big Ten, for them to come out and play this well, a little bit surprising. You know, I want to ask you also about Michigan State, because that's a team Indiana's got coming up, I think next weekend, up in East Lansing. That's obviously going to be a really tough game. What stands out to you about Michigan State to this point in terms of just how they've played so far and where you think maybe they fit into the conference race? They're only a half game behind Illinois in the Big Ten title race, so not really being talked about, I don't feel like, as much as Illinois and Purdue, but it feels like they're a team that definitely has a pretty high ceiling, at least in terms of the Big Ten title race.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about Michigan State. I just don't really get the warm and fuzzies when I watch them. They don't seem like, frankly, very talented. I know they have some good players, but we're talking Big Ten across the board, like elite players in the Big Ten. I don't think they have any. Tom Izzo's fantastic coach, you know, arguably the best coach in the conference, one of the best in the country, of course. But as far as talent goes, there's plenty more talent in the Big Ten teams wise. And I think they're grinding out these wins. And if you look at a couple of results that they flip the other way, these close games, you'd be looking at a different story. Their loss to Northwestern at home without Pete Nance in the lineup for Northwestern was kind of eye opening for me. It was like, maybe this team isn't that good. For me, how they're doing so well, coaching, and they're pretty disciplined on defense. But I think when push comes to shove in the tournament, I think they're candidate to go out pretty early.
Yeah, I agree with you with the talent. I mean, Christie's obviously a guy that has some long-term upside. Gabe Brown is a guy that I like quite a bit. Malik Hall, I mean, he's shooting out of his mind almost 56% on threes. I don't know how sustainable that is. Right. And Joey Hauser, you know, as much as I kind of ripped him last year for not being very good, because he had all this hype coming in, and I remember watching him at Marquette and was kind of like, I wasn't overly impressed with what he did at Marquette. It was basically just shoot open jump shots when Marcus Howard and Sam Hauser got all the attention. So I wasn't thrilled about him as an addition, but to his credit, he's played a little bit better this season. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It seems like definitely from a coaching perspective, that's kind of what's getting them over the hump. So yeah, that'll definitely be a tough place regardless though, for Indiana to go up there and play. Right. So in terms of Northwestern, who you just mentioned, that's who comes up for Indiana right after Illinois. Is this program just destined for bottom 4 or 5 in the Big Ten? For, you know, I thought after they made the tournament that year, they would at least figure out how to make it again in the next 5 or 6 years, but it doesn't seem like it's headed that way.
Yeah, it does. And I don't think Chris Collins can get out of his own way, unfortunately. And, you know, he seems like a good guy and he has talent. He's really amassed the most talent they've ever had there. He's the only guy that's ever brought in a 4-star top 100 guy. And they're a good team. If you watch them play, they are go to toe-to-toe with a lot of these other, you know, really good Big Ten teams. They have leads in these games, and it just kind of goes away, and they fall down the stretch, especially those last 4 minutes. And the only thing I can point to there is coaching, or at least leadership of some sort there. Because I like Nance, I like Bowie, I like Adige, I like a lot of these players, but when you just can't win the game, it's like the opposite of Michigan State. Besides the game they played Michigan State, they just can't seem to win the games late, and they keep giving up these leads. So I would say, yes, they are destined to keep finishing bottom 4, bottom 3 in this conference, unfortunately.
Yeah. You look at their last, 11 games, a lot of them, you know, less than 5 or 6 points they've, when they lose. I mean, they were blown out at Purdue, which, I mean, that happens, but they lose by 2 at Michigan. They lose by 3 at home to Illinois, and then they barely beat Rutgers at home in overtime. It's
they're up 20 that game too.
Yeah, and that's it's hard to give up 79 points to Rutgers. I mean, that's
yes, it is.
That, I've watched a lot of I watched Rutgers Nebraska over the weekend, and that was an adventure. Kind of continuing on here through the Big Ten, a couple of teams that I wanted to also ask you about. Iowa is a weird one for me because they're ranked 22nd in KenPom, but you look at their profile in terms of who they've actually beaten this season. Their best wins, probably Indiana at home, which is a 9-point win. They beat Utah State on a neutral court. I guess that's a pretty good win too. They beat Virginia on the road in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. But I look at all these mock brackets and they're in all of them. But they're 4-6 in the Big Ten. They've got, I think, two games coming up against Nebraska, which, you know, those are games they can win. They play Maryland and Minnesota coming up. I mean, I think they're going to get to 10 wins in the Big Ten, but do you think that's going to be enough based on what they've actually accomplished? And you also have to look at the non-conference, which they played an absolute joke of a schedule.
Yeah, brutal.
I look at them as a potential team that, you know, if they don't get to 11 or 12 Big Ten wins, they could be one of those teams that's sitting at home on Selection Sunday.
Yeah, it's weird. Their analytics are so strong. Like you said, 22nd in KenPom, you go down the list, it's like, I guess I don't really get that. They blew out Utah State on a neutral. That certainly raised them. But they've been about hovering around the same level for a month or so now. And they're pretty much 500, a little bit less than that. That non-conference strength of schedule is going to come into play for seeding for sure, because it's down there towards the bottom of the country. They played nobody outside of Virginia. I think they'll make it. I think you're right, though. If they get to 10 wins in the Big Ten, there's probably enough firepower there to get them there. But their team doesn't really scare me that much. It's typical Fran McCaffrey. It's, you have a great offense, you have a bad defense, you have one really good player, Keegan Murray, and then the rest of the guys are just pretty good offensively. I don't think Fran McCaffrey has made a Sweet 16 ever in his entire coaching career, which is shocking, but I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, this is kind of just a loaded question, but do you think this team's any good? I mean, like push comes to shove, you know, on a neutral court, I don't know who I'm picking Iowa to beat over the top half of the Big Ten. I just don't. To me, they seem propped up by, you know, Look at their Big Ten wins. I mean, they beat Maryland at home, they beat Indiana at home, they won at Minnesota, and they beat Penn State at home. They're 4-6. I mean, that's literally,
yeah, not great.
I mean, IU's not that great of a win. I mean, it's a good win. Don't get me wrong. Indiana's been a good team this year, but if that's your best win, I don't think you're doing cartwheels over your resume.
Yeah, and you lose to Rutgers at Rutgers, which is tough. But they scored 46 points in that game, and then you just lost to Penn State in double overtime. So. No, I wouldn't be. I'm not afraid of them over maybe eight other Big Ten teams for sure.
Michigan, where are you at with the Wolverines? They obviously looked like a Final Four team when they came into Bloomington, and then they followed that up by, you know, getting blown out by Michigan State. They barely beat Northwestern at home, and then Nebraska they had trouble with the other night after Hunter Dickinson got into foul trouble. Is this team going to have enough to kind of get over the hump?
I don't know. I keep not wanting to give up on them. I keep thinking they're going to figure it out soon. Thought they did after the Indiana game, but I don't know. They have so much talent. It's ridiculous how much talent they have, but something's not clicking. And I don't know if it's just that Devontae Jones hasn't been as good as they were expecting at point guard. I don't know if Howard's figured out exactly who to play. He's playing Diabate a lot more now, which is a good idea in my opinion. I guess you could also blame it on they've had some COVID issues. They've had some guys out of the lineup, if you want to give them that caveat. But still, I mean, they've lost a lot of games to teams they probably should have beaten. I think at the end of the season, they're going to be right there in the bubble. And I think there's still a chance they can pull the season around, but it is starting to get a little bit bleak, and I'm losing my faith. The credit I gave them is starting to run out.
Yeah, and you look at their next six games, I think kind of tells us where they're going. I mean, they're at Purdue, they go to Penn State, which that's not, you know, a tap in putt by any means. Right. I mean, anything can happen there. They host Purdue, host Ohio State, at Iowa, at Wisconsin. That's pretty. That's serious. Last Big Ten team I wanted to ask you about, and they're obviously irrelevant for the purposes of NCAA tournament or anything in terms of the Big Ten race, but it's just a curiosity standpoint. Fred Hoiberg at Nebraska. We're in year three. I looked back at Nebraska's record under Tim Miles. I think they made the tournament in his second year there. They were a decent team throughout his tenure, not, you know, top half of the Big Ten consistently, but a team that you didn't necessarily want to play in Lincoln, or a team that could come into your place and get a win. And what Hoiberg's done there to me is completely head scratching. They've turned the roster over completely almost every season. Last year, it made no sense. Some of the things he did in terms of that roster, bringing in Teddy Allen, I thought was a complete, disaster, just in terms of trying to win games, to have him out there. No disrespect to him as a player, but he wasn't going to help them win any games or help develop anyone else in the program. This year, he kind of flips the roster around again, brings in Bryce McGowan, who is a great talent. People were talking about him as Big Ten Freshman of the Year, although I can't see how you give somebody that doesn't win a league game Big Ten Freshman of the Year. That's a different discussion. But have you been surprised at just how inept Nebraska's been under Hoiberg? I mean, they're 170 in KenPom. This is, we talk about the Big Ten not having any bad teams. They're a bad team.
They are, and they're 5-45 in Big Ten play under Fred Hoiberg, which is shocking. He was good at Iowa State. It feels like he's lost interest in development, player development. And that's why, he's always gone to the portal. I think he's even said he hates recruiting, and that's part of the reason he went to the NBA the first time. But like Teddy Allen, bad choice. Alonzo Verge, in my opinion, bad choice. It's basically throwing a bunch of guys that individually are talented together and expect them to be a team. And without proper coaching or proper player development, you're just not going to get there. And I think it was, be careful what you wish for if you fire Tim Miles, who lifted Nebraska's program higher than it's ever been, was really solid there. Like you said, made a tournament. Nebraska's never made a tournament. Tim Miles got you there, and he did pretty well. They're kind of reaping what they sow now with Fred Hoiberg. I don't know if he lasts much longer over there.
They owe him $18 million, I think, if they get rid of him. So it's going to have to be a... I looked that up. As I watched Nebraska Rutgers the other night, which... Don't ask me what I was doing spending my Saturday night watching Nebraska Rutgers, but I found myself on the couch watching that game. And after they figured out how to blow, I think it was 11-point lead at home to Rutgers, I'm looking at their schedule. I'm like, are they going to win a Big Ten game? It doesn't look... I mean, sure, they could, but at some point, I feel like a team like that, you kind of throw in the towel. If you keep losing, eventually you just want the season to be over. And then I looked it up. Sure enough, $18 million is hard to fathom. And they gave him like a secret contract extension that nobody knew about. And then it was kind of publicized at a later time. So it seems like one of those things maybe where he just says like, I'll leave and just give me, another year's salary. And but I agree. I mean, Tim Miles, say what you want about the guy. I mean, he was on this podcast once. I thought he was, awesome, an awesome guy. Just had a lot of energy and really just kind of surprised me that Nebraska kind of felt they were above that type of performance where they had to go out and make the move. I'm curious, I talked about to Matt about this before the season, just like kind of what you guys do with best bets and kind of studying the sport from a, from an analytics and betting perspective. What this season, any trends that you're noticing just in terms of the sport in general, and anything that kind of stands out? Because I know a lot of people are March is not that far away. People are going to be obviously ready to fill out their brackets and, whatever people do in terms of gambling is completely on them. I don't support it or say anything against it one way or the other, but obviously there's probably a lot of people that listen to the show that are interested in it. So I'm just kind of curious any trends that you're seeing in college basketball this season, anything that kind of stands out as we move along here closer to March?
Well, big picture in terms of title contention, this is one of the most wide open years I can remember in recent history. Like last year, okay, Baylor, Gonzaga, one of these teams is going to win the title. Everyone's pretty sure about that. You know, even a couple of years ago, it was Virginia, Gonzaga again, maybe one or two teams that really had a legit shot. This year, there's maybe 10 teams that I could say, yeah, I could see them winning the title. You got Auburn coming out of, you know, seemingly nowhere, Arizona doing the same thing with Gonzaga, with Baylor, with Kentucky, with Purdue, maybe if they ever figure out defense, Kansas, so many good teams this year. And maybe that's a little bit of a factor of the extra year for COVID. Maybe it's a factor of immediate eligibility for transfers. It's just making the player crop better, whatever it is. It's awesome. I'm glad we have it because it's going to make for a super exciting tournament, something that's always exciting, but maybe even more so when it's so wide open like that.
Is there a team that you're looking at right now that maybe isn't a top 20, top 25 KenPom team, and you look at that team and say, when the bracket comes out, obviously it's all dependent on matchups and everything, but is there a team that you look at and say, this is somebody I like for a deep run?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't hate Wisconsin in there just because they have a Johnny Davis. I love a team that can just hand it to a guy and say, take over and be that guy in March. There's always a guard in March who, right, stands out and does something crazy. Mid-major realm, like San Francisco, if they get there, they could be a real problem. They have size and they have a guy like Bouye, point guard, who can do whatever he wants on the floor. So those type of teams, a guy with a star guard and a team kind of capable of getting, we'll say, just stupid hot from outside, like Oral Roberts did last year behind Asemus. Those are the type of flyers you want to take in your bracket, I think.
Who are the teams that kind of stand out that are in that mid-major category that are ranked pretty highly? And I don't obviously follow these teams, so just kind of curious to get your thoughts on Loyola Chicago. Everyone remembers their success last year, knocking off Illinois in the tournament. And then Murray State is a team that's 20-2. They're in the top 40. You know, what do you like about both of those teams? And do you see, with kind of the right matchup, those being teams that could make some noise in March?
Yeah, Murray for sure. Because they're not like your typical mid-major team. They are legitimately built like a power team. Like, they have guys that could go and start for power teams right now. KJ Williams, they're big guys, 6'10" and unstoppable. And Tevin Brown is one of those guards that can get hot, score whenever he wants to. And I think they're pretty well coached too. I think last year they had a strange year with COVID. This year they're really proving that they belong. They're experienced and just super talented. So I think they could definitely make a run. They're set up right now to be a pretty high seed mid-major wise, like maybe even 8 seed right now. We'll see how they finish off. They could run the table in the OVC. And Loyola, of course, they're there again. Defensively, they're just so good. It's just, they're in it every single game with the way they D up, their discipline. And Drew Valentine is a great coach, in my opinion.
Have you been surprised at all that they, you know, obviously Porter Moser had a lot of attention in terms of just what he was able to do as their head coach. And it was even a guy that I think some Indiana fans were curious about when the job opened last spring. Have you been surprised at all just at how little drop off there's been from him to Drew Valentine? And is Valentine somebody that we're maybe going to see in the Big Ten at some point down the road?
I think so. Yeah. I would say I am surprised a little bit by how steady it stayed, especially because Cam Krutwig was so important to that team. He's gone. But from all I've heard, Valentine was, you know, he was under Moser for a few years there, and he practices his philosophies, and he's kept the chemistry, the whatever you want to call it, the terminology the same, all of that stuff. And he kept every single player from that team except Krutwig. And then he adds two really good Ivy transfers in Schwieger and Chris Knight. So from that lens, it's like, oh yeah, I guess they should be still pretty good, even without Porter Moser.
So wrapping this up here, you know, going back to Indiana, Illinois, you said earlier in the show that you liked Indiana on Saturday. Is that just Assembly Hall? Is there something about the matchup that maybe we're not thinking about here? Or is this just Indiana at home and they haven't lost at home very much? I mean, they lost once to Michigan.
Yeah, this is mainly Indiana at home. I really just think it's going to be an awesome environment like it always is. I'm sure Indiana's not happy that Illinois, their place is called Assembly Hall as well. So there's probably some rivalry in there. But no, I think it's going to be an awesome environment. I think they're going to get it done.
Well, Kai, thanks for the time. It's good to have you on the show. And everyone, we'll try to get back next week, probably ahead of the Michigan State game. Indiana is up in Evanston on Tuesday night to take on Northwestern. Miller Copps return to Welsh Ryan Arena. That'll be an interesting scene. And then Indiana goes next weekend to Michigan State. Thanks again, Kai, for being on the show. And we'll be back, everyone, next week with another episode of Podcast on the Brink.